Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
Welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is the Friday evening roundtable. I'm here with my co-host tonight, Dave. I'm actually not broadcasting from St. Charles County this evening. I am down in Dave's country, Springfield, Missouri. Tomorrow I will be at the Americans for Prosperity Defending the American Dream Summit, and we're getting ready for that and enjoying Springfield, Missouri tonight. How are you doing tonight, Dave?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Lisa? Now you're actually going to have a speaking part in the presentation tomorrow. Am I right?
I'm sitting on one of their breakout panels. I think we'll be talking about blogging, and I'm going to try to weasel my way into the activist panel later on in the day, and just really rub elbows with all the grassroots folks down here.
Good. Yeah, I have a commitment, and I'm not going to be able to make it. But for you listeners out there, if you're in the Southwest Missouri area or can get here tomorrow, it's a great deal. I think you can still go online and buy the $10 lunch right up till gate time.
But the event is free. It's the only thing that costs anything is the $10 lunch. So come on in. And tonight we're joined by Missouri Journal's none other than Brian Hook. How are you doing tonight, Brian?
Good. How's it going, Springfield?
I'm sorry, I'm kind of cutting out on you guys. I'm broadcasting from my cell phone in a hotel room, so I'm kind of a little not on top of it. We are here to talk about the week's events, and one of the week's events that happened this week was a big controversy over a story that Brian wrote in the St. Peter's Patch. Brian is a regular contributor to Culture Vigilante on Wednesday nights, and Brian is also the man with a head for figures. He generally and regularly writes about the Missouri budget and follows the Missouri legislature very closely on that issue. And he wrote a story of last week that seemed to ruffle some feathers with certain members of the legislature. And the basics of the story was a description on the differences between general revenue and what was the other, Brian?
I usually refer to it as total spending, but it's also referred to as the operating budget or the total expenditures. That's part of the problem. Everything goes by about five or six names.
Right. So the way that you would understand it, if you had been listening to the legislature spin it, we balance our budget every year, and the way they spin it, I think, as they said, that they had been making cuts to the budget, when actually, in essence, we are spending more money than we have in previous years. Is that correct, Brian?
Yes, that is true. Part of the article that I was calling them out for was they were saying that they were making spending cuts, which makes it different. If you say that you're making budget cuts since there are several budgets, you can actually be making budget cuts where in one place, but the budget's going up in another. So I was calling them out for playing with the words there, and some of the leadership wasn't very happy with me about that.
Right, they kind of lashed back in a very unprofessional way. But let's lay the groundwork here. Let's talk about the numbers a little bit. and make sure that that's clear to the listener, okay? Because let's start with how the Missouri legislature is defining their budgeting. Can you explain a little bit about how you've outlined it in this way, that how Missouri legislature is defining their budget?
You were cutting out there a little bit, but I think you were asking me to explain a little bit about how the budget operates. The best way to start is to look at the total operating budget, which they passed for this fiscal year, which is going to be $24.1 billion. That includes the federal funds and other funds that are earmarked for specific purposes. And then you get down to what they call the general revenue budget. And this is the one where lawmakers usually want to talk about that one because they have more control over that. And this is the money that comes from the state tax revenue that's not designated for a specific purpose. And that's a much smaller figure that's going to be it's going to be $8 billion for this year. So, I mean, it's the difference between $24 billion and $8 billion. And so, but even if you look at just the revenue and they say that they're reducing that, they're not. That's actually also going up by $104 million for this year compared to last year.
Okay. We do want to note, Missouri is required to have a balanced budget every year. And they do have a balanced budget every year. The issue here that I think is happening, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I may be going down another rabbit trail with this budget, is that they do balance the budget every year. They don't spend more than they take in, which is, I believe, it's the Hancock Amendment makes us do that. Is that correct? And
that has to do with taxing can't pass. But there's another part of the Constitution, I believe, that makes it so we have to balance the budget. I'm not sure what the specific language is.
Okay. It was suggested to me by someone today that, you know, as Missouri goes, I mean, we are doing very well. We are keeping it, you know, we're keeping in line with our spending. We're balancing our budget. You know, our spending is very close to... our spending is very close to... inflation. We're very close to the rate of inflation. We're exceeding it a little bit, but as general state budgets go, we're not exceeding it by much. Is that true?
I looked at it over 5 years compared to the consumer price index, which is 13.9%, and the budget is increasing 15.8%. So it's fairly close. It also, interestingly, I thought it would be different. It tracks per capita or the average personal income as well over a 5-year period. So
where are we? Where are we with the per capita per income?
Well, since I went to the 2011 fiscal budget, because we're still waiting on the numbers, the exact expenditures for 2012. But the average person makes $38,000, and so in 2006, 5 years before, it was
$33,000. Okay. So, the very last line of your article, family numeral has increased 458% from $69 billion in 81 to $2 billion in 2011. So that's a huge number.
Yes. And I don't know, I'm having problems. You're cutting in and out, but I think you said that between the 30 years it went up over 500, or maybe just a little less than 400, went up a lot. But during that 30-year period, the budget year over year only went down 3 times. The most recent time was in 2011 when it dropped 1.9%.
All right. So, Dave, do you have any questions for Brian? You want to add anything to this? Am I going down the right track with the questions that we've discussed?
Well, I don't know. I hate to be redundant at this point because I stepped offline for a minute to screen a phone call, and I may have missed this, but you told us that the operating budget in 2012 was $24.1 billion. Am I right?
For 2012, I would have to look up the exact number. I know that for 2013, if you compare appropriations to appropriations, it's going up 3.4%.
Okay, so it went up.
So it was about $23 billion. In 2012 is what was appropriated. We don't know the exact expenditures yet, but $24 billion is what it's
okay.
slated to be for this fiscal year, which is 2013.
And that's the operating budget. Now, what was the increase in the general budget from 2012 to 2013?
Not as much. It goes from $7.9 billion to about $8 billion. It's $104 million. I don't have the percent there.
That's okay. Plus $104 million. Okay, so basically then, it is disingenuous to say, you can say we're raising below inflation if that's true. You can say we're not spending all the revenue if that's true, but it is disingenuous, as you claimed in your original article, to say we cut spending when in fact we're spending 3.4 more in the operating budget and 104 million more in the general budget, right?
That is correct.
Okay. So we're not actually spending less, so we didn't cut spending. We may have done something else, but we didn't cut spending.
And therein lies the controversy that ensued with the PATH article. Yes?
Right. That is correct. That sums it up pretty well.
So can you tell me then, I mean, you are into, and let's take a quick aside here, Vaughn Carricker has joined us. Good night, Vaughn. How are you?
Hi. How's everybody? I'm fine, by the way.
We're talking with, we've got Brian Hook here tonight, Vaughn, and he's talking to us about how we define spending evidently differently than those who are actually doing the spending define it. So Brian, now, if you can change your mind over to political speak, what is Speaker Jones saying when he says I cut spending? What is he trying to, how is he justifying that? What is he defining as spending and cutting spending?
Well, both the governor and both Republicans have had programs or specific departments where they have cut spending. And so, therefore, they would say that we've cut the budget. And so both of them in certain areas have cut spending. And Jones will point to the ones that he says, you know, people are – one of his arguments on Patch was, you know, liberals are always screaming at him for cutting the budget. Well, those are he's cutting the programs that they don't like.
Right.
But obviously somewhere else in the budget, it's going up.
Right. Okay.
Well,
okay.
Overall, where has it gone up?
Were you able to
identify where the budget, actually the spending went up?
Oh, where specifically in the budget?
Yes.
It's all over the board. A lot of it was in the education area, and Republicans were quick to say that they used the word restored funding, which I think that's somewhat misleading as well. But they were saying that they, in essence, increased spending in education. So I think a lot of it went to education. And then there are also in those areas where then Jones would make the argument that he doesn't have the control because of the matching grants and all that, because of the federal money. If that's going up, they don't have the control for that area that's going up.
Are you talking about programs, for example, like Medicaid, where they accepted stimulus money and applied it to Medicaid and can't go back down?
part of that would be included, yes.
I had a question, just playing devil's advocate here. When you say they restored funding or increased spending on education, why is that a bad thing? Someone out there is going to tell you, why is that a bad thing? What, do you hate kids? Do you hate education?
Oh, pick me. I have that answer. Because they're not getting the results of the money.
Lisa, I can't understand the word you're saying.
Oh, they're not getting the results for their money they're spending. That's why. Well, that's why it's a bad thing. And the money's not really going to kids. It's going for salaries and all kinds of extraneous things that, you know, I mean, we know that, educational spending is not the most cost-effective spending that there is.
Well, I and my argument still remains, doesn't have anything to do with spending, doesn't have anything to do with where the money went. It is disingenuous, bordering on dishonest, to stand on the campaign podium and say, I cut spending. Maybe it's great. Maybe I don't care if you cut spending. Maybe I don't care if you spent more this year because I like all the programs. But it is disingenuous, bordering on dishonest, to stand on the campaign podium and say I cut spending when in fact you spent $8 billion more than you did last year, or 3.4% more than you did last year.
And that
okay.
Was sort of the. That was sort of the point of my article was I'm not making a case for spending more or less. I mean, I have my personal preferences, but as a journalist, I'm just trying to put out the facts that sort of was just said is they're out there. Republicans, for obvious reasons, want to be able to say to their voters that we cut spending.
Right.
Well, they can't, but they do anyways.
Right.
And that's the problem that I'm having. If you want to make these other arguments that we're balanced the budget, we're being fiscally responsible, we're better than Illinois, these things are all true.
Right.
I mean,
you know, it's,
stay away from
misleading. It is exactly the same people saying I cut spending when they didn't, who are poking fun at Claire McCaskill for saying we made a budget, the president signed it into law, the appropriators followed it, we saved money, and we cut the size of the federal government. I mean, they point at her and say, liar, liar, pants on fire, and then they stand up there and say, we cut spending.
That's a pretty powerful analogy there and a pretty good comparison. But I don't know, Dave, if I would split hairs between being disingenuous as a politician and being dishonest.
Well, it's disingenuous if the man misspoke. If the man didn't mean I cut spending, but I cut back on some of these programs that nobody likes. You know, when he says I cut spending, but now, and this is a reason why we have Brian here tonight. And I sent an email I'll tell you all fair now. I sent an email to Tim Jones and asked him if he would come tonight. I didn't get an answer back. And he may not check his – all I had was his capital mail. And I don't – he may not check it every day. I don't have a clue. But correct me if I'm wrong, Brian. You then when he accosted you, you wrote back and asked him – To define what I mean by I cut spending and be a little bit more specific by what he cut, and his office indicated to you that he was not going to quit saying I cut spending.
That is correct. And after that, there was another exchange where I asked him, you know, to come. You're welcome to give comments, or you know, I'd love to talk to you about where or how or what how you're defining this. His response was something that I'm lower than the Neanderthals over at Fired Up Missouri, was his response to me.
Yeah.
So now, in his credit, in his some of his responses, in there was a lot of different ways to deflect the message. But in some of his responses, he started to change his wording to say that he cut the budget, and he
right.
was referring specifically to the general revenue budget. So he may be changing his wording somewhat, because it appeared to be in the comment section that he was.
And that's still, in my that makes him a little bit less disingenuous, in my opinion, because it's an indication to me that he knows what he's saying, and he's not just misleading himself. But now you're getting more and more dishonest, because if he is giving us indications at Patch where 340 people are reading what he says, and he's still going out and talking to the 100,000 and saying I cut spending, knowing now we know that he knows better, then that is dishonest.
I can't argue there. Mr. Hood, I have a question for you, sir.
Yes.
Going forward, and I would guess that the speaker is not up for election, or he wouldn't hesitate to refer to potential voters so freely as Neanderthals. Going forward,
I'm not in his district, but.
And the speaker is up for election. He is just in fact the assumed speaker at the moment for the next session, Vaughn.
But it's also pertinent to note that he's unchallenged in his district,
right?
And he receives a great deal of money from large money donors.
Right. He's unchallenged in, am I wrong, Lisa? He's unchallenged in both the primary and general. I mean, he's going.
That's it. I think he's unchallenged in the general. I'm not
sure. Okay. All right. So unless he does something where he gets caught in the bathroom with a wide stance, he's going to be around for a while.
Right.
Mr. Hook, going forward, budget-wise with the state of Missouri, how do you think we're going to fare in the current economic climate? Do you think that this money that was restored to the Department of Education is going to garner votes, or are the voters just too angry with the current leadership in Jefferson City to be swayed by this sort of thing?
I think the Republicans are going to maintain their solid majority, I think, but at the same time, I think it's going to be hard. Republicans are behind in the governor's race. I mean, honestly, I think the next 4 years will look a lot like the past 4 years here in Missouri.
Okay. Now, do you think that, and this is probably, tell me if it's out of your purview, do you think that right to work has a chance of succeeding in Missouri?
My hunch would be no, I don't think it does. That's putting on my analyst head, taking off my journalist hat, but I think that there, and part of the reason is, I mean, it's because of the strong unions in the metropolitan areas, but also that our public sector is not, and people in the labor movement would have to correct me if I'm wrong on this, but the government workers it's not the same as in the private sector where it's a closed shop. You don't necessarily have to be in the union. So that makes it a little bit different than, say, in Wisconsin, where they were having the right-to-work issue flared up with Governor Walker.
I see. Thanks. Thanks for answering my question.
Okay.
It's
your show,
okay.
Lisa.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so... Well, let's talk about the response a little bit, because this has been part of the controversy this week, and I think we need to touch on it. Okay, we have a man here who is running unchallenged in his district. I think he's unchallenged in the general, but I don't know that for sure, but generally unchallenged. He's the House Majority Leader at the moment, and the presumed he's about to become the House Speaker of the House. Okay? Now, disagree or agree on the subject at hand here. The way that this was handled was completely unprofessional in my view. and the temper tantrum that ensued from Mr. Jones was just way out of line. He had valid points to make on his point and on his part of the argument, but, and this is not the first time this has come from Mr. Jones. I mean, he came out and attacked Brian Hook on this issue and just rolled in the mud with it. I mean, called him names, didn't infer, absolutely said that he was committing journalistic malpractice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all kinds of things. I mean, I've seen the Twitter stream, I've seen emails. I mean, it's just absolutely out of control. And like I said on Wednesday, I think it's time not for the people of Missouri to start taking notice of this kind of thing. Not only is it disingenuous to spin the facts the way they've been spun, I mean, there are pros and there are cons to this issue, and you can make good note of both of them, but it's just incredibly unprofessional for the presumed Speaker of the House to be attacking people in a very public manner over a disagreement over the facts.
So, Mr. Hook, has this been your experience in the past with Mr. Jones or any other legislator?
Absolutely. And he's done this before with other people.
I've seen him do it before. I have, by any other lawmaker, I have not been called a fake journalist, fraudulent, poser journalist, journalist malpractice. That was on Twitter. I mean, I have actually never been called that by anyone publicly. I mean, I'd have to go back and do a search. Maybe somebody has said that on Twitter. I don't know. But, I mean, it was, and then on Patch, he said I was politically motivated diatribe, it was a fraudulent attack piece. It was manufactured, misleading, incomplete, inaccurate. But
rather opposite the gotcha taxes and fraudulent ambushes. I mean, just absolutely off the rails. The someone who's going to hold a very important position in the Missouri House.
I was going to say, in comparison, I've written pieces like about the Missouri Department of Economic Development. I went as far as saying, if you wanted to make it appear like you were not telling the truth, here's how you would go about it. They do not like me there. I know this for a fact, but they have never called me a name.
You know, Mr. Hook, I think it's interesting that this, and tell me if I'm wrong, this is the new trend in local politics. I see it in my jurisdiction with our local, with our outgoing Senator Kevin Engler, who's running for the House, with his buddy Gary Romines running for his spot in the Senate. And I have had people come to me and tell me horror stories about how our elected officials have just gotten down into the pigsty and just swung it with the best of the worst. Is this a new trend that you see, Mr. Hook, in your journal, in your journalistic endeavors? Do you see this in business?
I think some of them are getting a little bit more mean-spirited, and I don't know if it has to do with the fact of the shortness of the amount of time that they're going to be there. They need to make a name for themselves, or if it's they're just following what the leadership is doing. I am not sure. It has gotten a little bit dirtier, I would say. Well, it's getting closer to be what they do nationally. I mean, mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter if it's another politician or if it's a journalist. If they don't like what you're saying, they're going to attack you personally and not argue the merits on the facts. I think that has changed somewhat in the last few years. I haven't run into this as much and as frequently as now.
I think it's changing, Vaughn. I do. I think it's changing at both the national and the state level. And my take on that is that these are dogs who are backed up in a corner. I mean, that my take on all this bile and vindictiveness that's coming out is, you know, these voters are really starting to catch on. These activists are really threatening our power and we're backed into a corner, and we better start fighting our way out.
You know, I think it's interesting because I remember reading history. I think it was Andrew Jackson's wife who died sometime around the time he was elected, and he always blamed the media and his political adversaries for the attacks that they made on her in public. He felt that it drove her to her grave, and I might have the wrong president, but I'm thinking it is Andrew Jackson. I could be wrong on that, but, you know, we've come a long way from the days of Lincoln when senators beat each other unconscious on the Senate floor with canes. But it seems to me that the pendulum has swung in that direction again.
Well, I mean, Madison and Jefferson and Hamilton and those guys, they didn't have good things to say about each other.
They fought duels and worked it out of their system.
They fought each other. So that would be easier. But, you know, I mean, here's something just an observation, okay, and I think you're right. I think it is the fact from the uprising of the grassroots movement, I think that the legislature has had the privilege of operating in the dark up until the last few years, and I think they liked it that way. And, you know, now the grassroots have been shining a light in the very dark corners of the Capitol. And now, you know, and they don't like it. And I think that's part of the deal. But however, I mean, somebody needs to remind these people that they work for us.
They are
not there for us to worship at their feet.
I think they're being reminded. I think they're being reminded of that, and that's what they're fighting against. I mean, you know, we had an exchange today with another legislator. I can't even remember where, but this legislator basically said, if you want to have anything to say about it, then run for the legislature. Don't be down here. And when someone pointed out to this legislator that what the watchdog groups are doing is as important as anything that the legislature is doing, this representative said, no way. What you're doing is nothing out there. And so, yeah, they really, really are scared of being called to task by the citizens, by their employers, for what they've been doing and getting away with. And I really think that's what this is all about.
Mr. Hook, I have another question for you, and I'm sorry to be bothering you. As a journalist, do you get the sense that the voting public enjoys this sort of Jersey Shore mud-slinging nonsense, or do they view it as entertainment, or do they view it as representation? Do you get a sense that they even notice?
Regarding the budget, I don't think they notice. I have been writing that Republicans were increasing spending. I've been doing that for about a year now. And, you know, month after month when the revenue numbers come out throughout the budget process. And finally, when I wrote I used hypocrisy in the headline and said that Republicans aren't telling the truth, and the Republicans started swinging back, that's when people started reading. So I'm not sure, I'm not really justifying my headlines, but it finally did get people to read about the budget. I mean, I know the numbers of how many people come on my site, and people do not read about the budget. I mean, they just don't. I can keep on reporting it, and I will. I'll keep on reporting the story because I just will. But people just, their eyes glaze over, and that's why when somebody tells them that we're cutting spending, they just automatically will go, okay, and take them for their word for it.
And you'll keep hearing about it, folks, here on Missouri Grassroots Radio Network, because we're going to keep having Brian on. And I mean, we're not going to turn this into the Missouri Budget Network, so you don't need to let your eyes glaze over. But we're going to keep in touch with Brian as time goes by, and we're going to, because Brian, correct me if I'm wrong now. So the legislators write a budget, and they say we're going to spend X number of dollars on this and Y number of dollars on that. And then revenue goes up, and so they finally got more money than what is budgeted to be spent. I suppose they send that back to us, right?
According to the that's where the Hancock Amendment comes in. It should, but I think, and again, I'm hazy on the on exactly what the numbers are, but I've read or I've been told that we're quite a ways below what the Hancock where that part of the Hancock Amendment would cut in, jump in. So there is. They could actually, if the revenues came in, the economy turned around and the revenue numbers came in higher, they could still spend more, quite a bit more. It's going to be a while before we're able to start getting into those Hancock checks again, I think.
So, again, just like in your household, the budget is a plan. The education... because I just can't pull anything else out of the top of my head, might get a little less money if revenue is down than what is budgeted, and they might get a little more money if revenue is up than what's budgeted, right?
Yes. With somewhat of a flexibility in there, they've taken out some of the estimates, which is supposed to make it a harder number, but I think there's still some flexibility in there. I could be wrong on that.
Okay.
Mr. Hook, may I ask you a strictly layman question? I've been listening to the show, and it's very obvious that you and Dave and Lisa are very knowledgeable. But to the average person listening here, even the word appropriation sounds like a mystery because appropriations may not be the same thing as spending. And I'd like you to speak to that. But I'd also like to ask you, is a balanced budget the same thing as a healthy budget, if that question makes any sense?
Yes, it does. You can, I mean, if you had a lot of debt, for example, and it was balanced, but you were hitting your bond notes or you were making your mortgage just barely, or you're able to carry the interest, it would be in balance, but you're right, it would not be healthy. Now, I do not think that Missouri, I think if you looked at it, I think Missouri tended, I mean, and this is credit to both parties throughout the last 30 years, I think that they have been fiscally responsible overall. And to answer your other question about the appropriations, I would describe it as what lawmakers approve to be spent.
And so that doesn't necessarily mean that it will be spent?
No, it doesn't have to. They could decide that they're not going to and give it back to, except for the ones that are designated. But some of those funds, they could actually spend less and say, and give us a check back. I don't ever expect that to happen, but I think that's a possibility.
I see. Now, so that's... I'm sorry.
The question that I was brought up today, I was sitting in a Packeter meeting. You know, we were listening to potential candidates campaign, you know, as they do in Packeter meetings. And the question was brought up there, you know, I mean, obviously we all know that there's fat in the budget, okay, which I think is one of the reasons why, you know, this was such a controversy this week. And I think you all have just touched on it. So, you know, our spending is increasing, okay? You know, it's not outflanking our revenue, you know, because we have to have a balanced budget, so we're spending with the revenue. But what are the, and I think this is the question, the elephant in the room question, so what is the legislature doing to cut spending, which is what they're telling us they're doing, so that we, instead of a 6% tax, we would have a 5% tax? And I think that was the gist of the entire argument this week. I think that's what the legislature would like you to believe is that they are cutting spending when in fact they're not cutting spending at all.
I think when they are cutting spending, it's more has to do with the fact that the revenues aren't coming in. I don't think they would be inclined to cut spending for any of the programs if they didn't have the revenue. Revenue drops, and so revenue is not increasing as fast as they would like in some areas, and so therefore that's where they need to hit the estimate. That's where they cut the spending. I don't think some departments, they are trying to trim the fat or, you know, streamline, whatever word you want to use. I think there is some of that. MoDOT has done some of that. But I think it's just revenue is just not coming in, so that's why they're making the cuts.
When they entered the fiscal year this year, I mean, I heard a swing that they were working. They were walking into a budget year with a budget deficit anywhere from 500, half a billion dollars to a billion, close to a billion. There was a swing there. So, you know, if they're cutting spending, I mean, the reason that they would have had to have cut budgets would be to make up for the stimulus money that they took last session, and so that they could have a balanced budget this session.
Right. They did have to make up some areas from the stimulus money ending. But the one of the things, and usually that shortfall amount is referred to for the general revenue budget, the smaller of the two. And that's usually figured by if we were going to continue increasing the amount that we have been, our revenue might not match that, so we might be short $500 million. So a shortfall, again, like the budget plan itself, is an estimate. I mean, so it's all estimates built on estimates built on estimates and some guesswork.
Sir, do you know how much that the state borrows to cover any shortfalls if they in fact do?
There is a reserve fund of about $500 million that they use each year around tax time, but they're required by the Constitution to repay back that. But they use that as a cash reserve fund. But usually, if the revenues aren't matching, that's when you're going to hear that the governor says he has the power to withhold money going to certain departments. And so that's when you'll start hearing the term withholding.
Wow. I really appreciated you answering all my questions. I really do. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm always happy to talk about the budget.
Take it, Lisa.
Okay. Well, that's the issue. I mean, I think that's been pretty well outlined. There is a difference in, and it's really a splitting hairs issue, I think, in what the definitions were between the total revenue and the general revenue and the cutting spending and that kind of thing. In my problem with it, and this is kind of a culture issue, and we can just debate it, you know, ad nauseum, and we kind of have a little bit already, but the issue is how are the legislators handling it, and how are they dealing with the Missouri people, and, you know, that was my big problem with it. I mean, you know, do I have a problem with them balancing the budget? No, they balance the budget. Do I have a problem with the way they're presenting it to the people? Yes, I do. Do I have a problem with them having a problem with me asking questions about it? I really have a problem with that because, as we touched on before, that's their job. You know, for a long time, we haven't been paying attention and we haven't been asking questions. And now that we are, I don't appreciate being met with the kind of criticism and attacks that we're being met with. And Brian's been met with them, I've been met with them, and the grassroots has been met with them, and I think that's a problem, and I think the grassroots and the people in Missouri deserve better.
No argument for me. I don't think we'll debate that ad nauseum here because I think everyone agrees with everything you just said, Lisa. That's that is the issue, isn't it? I mean, in a nutshell, that is the issue. The issue isn't that we're talking about here tonight isn't how much we're spending even or how we're budgeting it. The issue is the honesty that has to go along, and accountability that has to go along with being a steward of my money.
Right. And I think that's the issue. I think it all boils down, I think that's it in a nutshell. It's accountability. And when you are going to your elected and you are requiring them to be accountable and you are being met with personal attacks, you know, whether you're observing it or whether you're receiving the attack, I think that sends a huge red flag up about the people that we've got sitting in offices in Jefferson City.
Right.
And I think that we need to send a huge message to those people that we're not going to, we don't appreciate that. We're not going to sit there and take that anymore. The people of Missouri absolutely deserve better than that, and things need to change. And I think that's what the grassroots movement is all about. It's always been about accountability and for people to be watching what's going on in government, be engaged in what's going on in government, and when they get engaged, that does not mean worshiping at the feet of the elected. That means critically looking at what's going on there and being able to give direction and expect answers and action instead of criticism and spin.
Well, and as you pointed out already once in the show, in the first half hour, Lisa, it is also an indication, I mean, aside from the arrogance, that these people have absolutely forgotten who the boss is. Who they work for. I mean, we are the employers. They work for us. And if you, I mean, if you work at McDonald's or Deerberg's and you get called into the boss's office and asked what it was you were doing when you, what it was you were thinking when you did this, you don't just spout off and start calling the boss a meathead and an arrogant SOB and tell him it's none of his damn business what you were doing.
Absolutely. If that would happen to anybody in the private sector, any of the taxpayers, we'd be out on our backside. And we're getting ready to send people back into office in a few weeks, and in places of powerful leadership. And these people are receiving absolutely no consequence. I think it's something that the people need to get fired up about. You know, to see their elected behave in this manner. You know, we've just accepted it for so long. I think it's time to stop accepting that kind of behavior, and it's time to start sending information back to Jefferson City and Washington, D.C., that this is not the kind of thing that we're interested in taking anymore from our leadership.
I'll tell you what, we need to get off our tails and run for office, don't we, Lisa? That's what I heard this morning.
That's what I heard today, yeah. What I'm doing is not effective enough. I'm not being effective, or my actions are not worthwhile here. I think that from what I'm hearing from the Missouri grassroots folks, they wouldn't agree with that too well. So.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, thanks for coming. I think it's been a very enlightening evening for me, at least. I was sitting there on the patch just. My head was reeling. I mean, I was making some input there, but all my input amounted to was, you know, hey. Okay, so we all agree the budgets went up in all 13 areas, and we all agree that spending went up in all 13 areas, so how do you say you're cutting spending? But I still had no understanding of what this is, where people were talking about general revenue or general budget and operating budget, general revenue and operating revenue, and how a guy could defend a position where he says, I'm cutting spending, when obviously we're spending more money than we did last year. And so I needed an education on that tonight, and I know that a lot of people did. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on.
And it's not too late for people to go to the St. Peter's Patch and read that article and read the comments there, and feel free to leave comments of your own.
No, yeah, the more people that, like Lisa said, the more people that jump on this bandwagon of we are holding you accountable, the better chance we have of actually turning the tide and getting these things changed. And you know, I mean, I don't want to say for me it's not, because for me it is a party thing, and for Lisa, I know it is a party thing, but for Brian, it's not even a party thing. I mean, you know, if you people out there listening are Democrats or progressives, then you need to do the same thing for your people. You need to hold their feet to the fire, and when they come out and say, yeah, we in August, we passed a budget, the president signed it into law, the appropriators followed it, and, you know, you need to say, bullshit, Claire. Now, come clean with us. And you know, it's not just a one-sided issue, us needing to hold these people's feet to the fire.
Well, and basically that's what the grassroots is all about. And for us to be criticized for doing what we're supposed to be doing and engaging in the process, you know, that sends a red flag, you know, that, you know, it's time to maybe replace a few people in Jefferson City and in Washington, D.C.
Yep.
It shouldn't be coming from anybody who holds an elected position. They serve. They do not dictate, they serve.
Right.
Well,
okay.
Thank you so much for being with us tonight. We appreciate your input, and you can look for Brian at the Missouri Journal, and he's also at the St. Peter's Path, and like he mentioned earlier, he will continue to be writing on the budget and keeping folks updated on what's really going on, or the other half of the information that you're maybe not getting from your legislators in Jefferson City. So thank you for being with us tonight, Brian.
Thank you.
Have a good night, Brian.
Thanks.
Okay, Lisa, what you got coming up for us?
Okay. Aren't you going to be glad when the primary is over, Dave?
I am. I hope I'm going to be glad. I may well be sad. And I'm going to talk to you and Vaughn and maybe Mike. You know, what I would like to do, and maybe we can do this, maybe we can. It's your night. No, it isn't. It's Vaughn's night. It's Vaughn's night to either offer to give up or not. But I'd kind of like to do a 4 or 5 hour watch party on that
on
night.
Election?
Yeah.
We could look at that and see where we are. I maybe I'll call you from the floor of a watch party because there's
well, that's what I mean. I mean we'll all be at our various watch parties. I'm coming up to St. Louis for a watch party myself, and we can bring our laptops along and we can bring up a couple of windows with CBS or with the local news affiliates, and we can keep our audience filled up on how things are going across the state.
Yeah, that could be fun. That's
yeah, it could be. I think it could be.
Tuesday night, I've got Shane Scholer.
Oh.
And that's why I said, you know, aren't you going to be glad when the primaries are over? But with all this campaigning, I think it's wearing on everybody. But we do have... yeah, you like this, don't you? We do have Shane Scholer. We'll have Brad... Shane Scholer's running for Secretary of State. And we'll have Brad Lager running for Lieutenant Governor and Todd Akin running for U.S. Senate.
Okay, Monday night I have a recorded interview I did with Congressman Akin, and I want to say, and I said this last night, I've been very, very critical of Congressman Akin, and I have to say that I have all the respect in the world for this guy. I talked to his people. I never talked to him until the actual interview, but I dealt with his people. I sent them emails back and forth, and I said, look, I said, I want to be upfront with you. I've been very critical of this guy. You can go to the radio, you can go to the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, you can go to my blogs. These are the specific three things I've been very critical, and I'm going to ask him these questions. I'm not going to argue with him. I'm not going to in any way try to play gotcha, but I'm going to ask him his questions, and I'm going to say justify what you did here. And he came up, he manned up, he came up for an interview, and he told it how he sees it. And you know, I'm going to tell you, I there's still some votes there that I disagree with, but in a 30-minute interview and some of the study that I did after that, this guy may have won my vote. So yeah, that's going to be an exciting interview to play on Monday night. Thursday, I have Scholer for a long interview. We'll on the Hour of Truth, we actually kind of get nauseous with our length sometimes for some people. But I like to get right down there to questions. Oh, great interview last night with Mike Moon. If you haven't heard it yet, you need to click on the podcast, folks, and listen to that. I mean, we get right down to, you know, what were you raised like and what made you the kind of person that you are, kind of stuff, way, way deep into the soul of people and past the talking points and the slogans, and find out who people really are and what they're, you know, everybody who's running and is going to win, except maybe Cynthia Davis, is either a Republican or a Democrat. But when you look at the full spectrum of political ideology out there, all the way from socialist to ultra-right-wing conservatist, theocrat, I mean, there is a wide range of political spectrum. The fact of the matter is that when election time comes, people tend to fall into either the elephant or the jackass, you know, with a couple of exceptions. The couple of exceptions seldom win. I think Sylvia's got a shot. Cynthia's got a shot. But the fact of the matter is that when you sit down with a person who's a Democrat or a person who's a Republican, I think it's pretty important to find out where in that spectrum they lie, because saying I'm a Republican gives you everything from just left of libertarian to you know, to wanting God to sit on the throne in the White House and dictate from St. Matthew. And I think it's very important to get down to a person's soul and find out where they're at on the political spectrum. And I'm taking a lot of your time, Lisa. Go ahead. That's where we're at on the Hour of Truth, anyway.
Okay. Well, in the Hour of Truth, as we had said, it's been stretched to an hour and a half. So we like to stretch the truth here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Let's talk about a couple of other things that we've got going on at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Don't forget to stop by the Grass Fire Alert page. We have been watching the developments of the ballot language on, what's the issue? On the insurance exchange issue. And we have dedicated a forum to that on the website for people to leave information there and to get information. So please watch carefully for that. And also, as we are approaching the holidays faster than we care to think about, we want to plan a little bit ahead, and Missouri Grassroots Coalition has a very small philanthropic project. We're trying to collect a few dollars to help out a few Missouri families this time, or this year at Christmas time, and we have a page dedicated to that called Secret Santa on the website, so please go there. If you have just a couple of dollars, send us a few dollars via PayPal, check our money order, so that we may bring some Christmas presents to some very deserving families who cannot afford to do so for their kids this year.
Okay. I didn't want to argue with our guest, Brian Hook, online, but, you know, I disagree with him. I don't see us losing the governor's race.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so. I think...
You think that it's you know what? It's going to be really interesting, Dave.
I think it is.
Watch the governor's race. I mean, we've got Randall, who is the grassroots guy.
Yeah.
Hands down. He ran a really great campaign, working really hard, going to small groups for a long period of time, campaigning with these people and just getting to know these people on really the grassroots level, you know, looking people in the eye, talking to them day to day. I don't think he could have run a more laborious campaign. He's probably exhausted. Nothing like anything I've ever seen before. Then you've got Spence, big money guy, kind of, you know, in my mind, maybe I'm wrong, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but kind of the establishment pick.
Oh, yeah.
He's running a campaign, he's financing his own campaign pretty much with his own money. As far as I know, and I could be proven wrong, I haven't checked in a few days, but none of the big money donors who traditionally donate to campaigns have given to the gubernatorial candidates. So Spence has a lot of money, Randall has none.
Right.
And both of these guys, it'll be really interesting to see how this comes out, and see if the grassroots, you know, how much the grassroots pushes Randall's up and, you know, and where they fall in with Spence and how that kind of plays.
I'm picking.
And who has more money than God, you know.
Yeah.
He'll be saturating the media, I'm sure, in November.
You people can come make book with me if you want. I'm picking Randall's over Spence by about 5 points, and I'm picking Randall's then over Nixon by about 25 points.
I think
Nixon gets hurt real bad once the race comes down to him and one other person. I think Nixon gets hurt worse if the race comes down to him versus Randall's than if it comes down to him versus Spence. And I think Nixon gets hurt by what's going to happen to Claire McCaskill.
Yeah, you think that whole Democrat anti-democratic wave is going to hit him in the governor's race?
I think it is. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, now you have to think outside the grassroots bubble.
Yes.
I'm running out of time here. But, you know, the grassroots folks are very engaged, but what about the next-door neighbor? You know, my neighbors who are taking their kids to soccer, they're not engaged. You know, Nixon has had no controversy, really. He's not been in the headlines. You know, they just know that he's the governor. Why wouldn't they just vote for the incumbent? You know, the budget is balanced. There's really no
Because Nixon has not yet had to go head-to-head with anybody. You don't see any Nixon ads out there, and you don't see any anti-Nixon ads out there. You see anti-Randall's ads, and you see anti-Spence ads, and that's all you see. And when it comes down to a month and a half of that soccer mom being inundated by the good of Randall's and the bad of Nixon and the good of Nixon and the bad of Randall's, I think Randall's wins out.
Do you think that Randall's is going to have the money after the primary to do that?
Absolutely. I think the big money on our side is letting this thing sort out so that they don't waste their money before it comes down to one guy against Nixon.
Well, that's a good theory. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the Republican money is going to come in the anti-Nixon race. You know, that's what I was talking to. I was talking to a guy who's running for a state legislator position the other day, and he's kind of frustrated. He's got no money, and his opponent's got a crud load of money. And it still looks like, I mean, because he's been out going to the grassroots meetings, and again, we're talking about a small state legislative district, so he can do that a little better than Bill Randall's or Adam Warren can do. But it looks to me and feels to me like this grassroots guy is going to win, and when he does, he will be the Republican candidate, and there will be some money.
Okay, I like the answer. You know, I'm just a little worried because usually the big money donors, the Sinkfields and the Foxes and all, you know, who they donate to both sides. They don't care. You know, they've got their, you know, their heads and their vests on both sides, and they always give money. They haven't given money in this race.
Well, that's because
they don't usually care who wins or who loses. They just care who, you know, that they want to be aligned with somebody.
Yeah.
And they haven't done that this time, and I'm wondering. And Spence, I think Spence has more contacts with the establishment and would be more likely to be supported by those big money donors than not. So I'm just surprised that money hasn't come in.
Yeah.
So maybe you're right.
And you know, I'm optimistic. I feel the tide is turning. But like you said, I travel in a pretty tight circle. You know, all of the people that I talk to every day are gung-ho, grassroots, anti-big government, anti-establishment, anti-big money people. So, you know, of course, I'm out there getting warm, fuzzy feelings because everybody I talk to is talking the same language I am. Where, you know, you might be right. I don't know, but the grassroots tentacles are long and deep, and I really think next door neighbor soccer mom. I think the same thing is going to happen to Romney. I don't think that race is going to be close. I mean, I think Romney blows Obama out of the water by 20, 30 points.
Yeah, on that we agree.
Yeah.
I think I don't believe the polls anymore. I don't believe anything coming out of the media.
Well, and you can't yet. I mean, I was just listening. I forget whether it was Bortz or even our local. It was my local guy today, Nick Reed, who pointed out once again, although everybody's pointed it out, you know, we are at exactly a point in time right now where Reagan was 5 points behind Jimmy Carter.
Okay.
So, you know, none of it means anything at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it all boils down to the economy. People don't really care about anything else. I think, you know, they care that their gas is too high and their paychecks are too small or they can't find a job.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's what they care about.
Right. Okay, Lisa, let's call it a night. I think we've had a very constructive evening. I've enjoyed the roundtable. I always enjoy sharing radio time with you. Thank you very much.
As do I. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week on the radio.
Have a good time tomorrow. Say hi to all my friends, to Mike Smith. Say hi to Tom Martz. Say hi to all my buddies down there that you'll be seeing, and say hi to my favorite people on the campaign trail. You know, Bill Randles and Todd Aiken and Mike Moon and all those folks you'll be seeing up there too. Tell them Dave said hi. All right.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dave. Have a great weekend.
You too.
We'll see you next week.
Good night.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.
Lights out.